And then they didn't even do it.
Right. I know. All right, Reggie, here we go. Let's go. You're behind the glass. I'm on the other side. We are socially distanced. We are not masked up, but we don't need to be. I will give you the three S's. You give me the music after the countdown, and we will make some magic. Here we go. Three, two, one. Oh, no, wait a minute. I didn't do it. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. Now it's official. Here we go. Ready? Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com. And yes, after almost a month of a technical glitch, we are now once again available on all those other platforms where you find and download your favorite podcast. We are again there. Sadly, we were not there for almost a month, and we're working on hopefully getting the podcast that did not get posted up there on. But don't forget, all podcasts, previous podcasts, are available at WGNRadio.com in the podcast section. Go to the Elton Jim prompt, and you will find all previous 225 episodes of said podcast, which can only mean one thing. Welcome to episode 226. And don't forget, if you enjoy this podcast, either for the last 4.5 years or just maybe for the 4.5 days, welcome aboard. Thanks for joining us. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. And also, if you can, tell your friends. Send them a link. Send them a message. Tell them that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and why the heck isn't it there? It's been a few weeks. I think it was about a month and a half or so ago that we checked in with our pop culture maven and regular contributor to this podcast, Emily Arminetti, and there's a few things bopping around this week in the pop culture world, so I thought it would be a good idea to give Emily a call. And here's Emily. Good morning.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Still COVID-free, still hunkered down, although I must say that we did for the first time last week, we've had a few people come and visit our house with masks outside, social distanced.
Oh, so now you're having driveway parking.
Yeah, right. Okay. But right. Last weekend, we went to someone else's house.
Oh, that's huge.
That is major.
Were you outside?
We were outside. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always outside. No, nothing indoors. Still have not been to a restaurant. Still have not been to a bar. Still have not been to a movie theater. I've obviously gone, to the grocery store, but we have expanded our social footprint once again.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, have you still stayed hunkered down?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, we have.
Uh-oh. I don't like that caveat. I'm sensing a really big unmasked party somewhere in Austin.
I was bar hopping.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I think the last time we talked, I probably mentioned that we have had people over in the backyard. Not people, I would say. Not people.
What did you have?
Well, meaning
the animals?
Well, when I say we've had people over, it makes it sound like we had like 20 people over.
Right.
I mean like one family at a time, and we are all social distancing.
Yeah, I mean we were only with a couple. I mean, it was, it was two people. We were, in fact, what I was very impressed with, our hostess created, she said, well, we're just going to have, some light thing, because it was, just a little kind of a late afternoon kind of visit, which actually lasted into the late evening. But she said, oh, we'll just have like a little, antipasto tray,
Yeah.
Much to her credit, she created two separate ones.
That's what I do.
Yes. I was very, when we've had people over here, they've brought their own thing. They just said, well, I'll bring my own,
Right.
Or we've ordered out and everybody had their own food. And so there was no sharing. But this she actually prepared, and she came out with two separate platters.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
Very nice. I was very impressed. So yeah, we had a nice time, and we're actually thinking of going to the Botanic Gardens.
Oh wow, that's going to be a big step.
Yeah, another big step. But once again, I mean, I think you're outdoors. You don't have to be next to anybody.
Right.
And it's just a way to get a little fresh air after being you know, pretty much quarantined for the last 6 months. But and I said about a couple of months ago, we went to the Art Institute. So we have been expanding incrementally, but always yeah. It's always outside or always with tough protocols. So I assume everyone at your homestead is still COVID-free?
So far, so good.
Yeah.
You can hear me. I'm going to knock on wood. You know.
There you go. Knock on formica.
I don't like to jinx anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, although actually we did have to do something else. So this week, in fact, I had to take my kids to the dentist.
Yeah, I've been to the dentist.
To the doctor.
And I have an exam in next week.
Yeah, it was I have to say it was nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
Because that is the longest that we've been in an enclosed space that was not our house.
I know. Like, yeah. And but you know the thing about the dentist though is they're more at danger, really.
I know. But the problem though is they're in danger, which means you're in danger.
Right, but my point is that your mouth is open, they are in your mouth.
I know. But then, right before you, they were in someone else's.
Well, hopefully, did they have the mask on?
They had the mask, but I felt like I was just watching every little thing. You know, I was like, oh, did you just put your hand in that mouth and then you changed your, and then you took your hand
right.
and put them on your sweater with gloves on, and then you changed your gloves, and then you put the hands in my kid's mouth, but then you put your hand back on the sweater and then back in the kid. It's driving me crazy. It was nerve wracking.
Well, I told you,
this is more so than the doctor's office, because the doctor's office, there was not a single other patient. Like there was nobody else there.
Yeah. Well, I've gone to a doctor where I've had to call in before when I get to the parking lot. And I've gone in. There was, like you said, there was no one in the waiting room. I went right in. It was the greatest, doctor's appointment I ever had, because it took 5 minutes. He came right in. I didn't have to wait. He came right in and we were done. And they just wanted to get you in and out. Whatever you needed to get done. So I've been, we've been to a few things. But like I told you, the same way you're talking, we had a We were returning one of our leased cars, and back in April when this really started, and the inspector had to come, and I literally was to, like what you're saying, I was writing down everything he touched,
right,
so that when he left, I wiped off everything, because he was because we still had the car for another month, you know, after he came and inspected it, we still had the car until we turned it in.
Right.
And so I was like, he went in there, he's touching the steering wheel and the doorknobs and everything, you know.
I know, you're like, buddy, could you touch more?
Yeah, and he didn't have gloves on, which surprised me. He had a mask, but he didn't have gloves.
Like, honestly, things that you wouldn't think twice about that now make us really anxious.
Yeah, no kidding. It's unbelievable. Weird. Well, I'm glad to hear everything's still safe there, even though.
Yeah, so far.
Now, how's Texas doing as a state? Are you still exploding or have you settled down?
Well, I mean, we kind of settled down after we had that surge in the summer. But the thing is, I think it's probably about to kick off again.
Oh, yeah. Once the schools, everything.
The schools.
Yeah. Right. Once I mean, you've got a lot of colleges. And I mean, that's a huge state between schools and colleges. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Austin, we have UT here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's
exactly.
A huge school.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even like the elementary and middle and high schools are starting to go back. I mean, we have a choice in our district. So, you know, you can opt for in-building or remote. And so our kids will be remote for some time. But I would say, I think according to like the latest, they survey the parents and then they make the results transparent. I think I want to say like almost 65 to 70% of the students in our kids' schools are probably going in our kids' specific school are probably going to be in person as of next week.
Wow.
And so
that's a lot.
Yeah. So I think I hope that things go well. But I wouldn't be surprised if we have another surge just as a result of Labor Day weekend.
There's everything.
And then kids going back to school. And so, we'll see. How's things in Chicago? Are they?
Illinois seems to have just, it's still very high. And, I think the numbers in Illinois are higher than they were back in March or April, but, we're still opening things, although the governor, despite some protests, said they are not going to have fall sports because there was a big push a couple weeks ago, like, we want our fall sports, because they pushed them back until the spring. But he said, no, we're not going to endanger lives just for a football game. So at least he's holding firm on that. But what's been happening is that Chicago, I think, has maybe gone down or stayed the same or gone up a little, but it's downstate where it was almost non-existent back in March and April, where now it is surging.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. It is what it is. But anyway, so lots of things bubbling in the pop culture world. That's why I thought I'd give Emily a call.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about the move to make Oscar more diverse. I'd like to talk about the Emmy Awards, which just finished yesterday. But I think we could, they were announced yesterday when this podcast posts. But we are recording this before, so we can actually talk about them in the future, and yet when this podcast posts, you, the listener, will know immediately if we were right or wrong. So there's no waiting.
Yeah.
So that's cool. And lastly, I want to talk about not Titanic, the Drew Barrymore show. Same difference.
Oh.
And I only bring that up because Emily has gone on record on this podcast on several occasions espousing her great admiration and love for Drew Barrymore. Now,
she's very lovable.
I'm going to say, hopefully it's Drew Barrymore, the actress.
Well, we'll see.
Okay, we will see.
I'll give you my review.
Yeah, okay. I can't wait. And I have not spoken to Emily on this one. We haven't spoken about any of these topics. I just gave her the topics. So I'm either going to look forward to being proud of Emily or having lost a ton of respect for her. So that's why it's a good reason to stick around for the whole podcast, because that may be just the most exciting part of the whole thing.
Right.
But anyway, I thought it was worth, because we've been talking about the Oscars over the last several years, about the efforts that they've had to make things more diverse, make things more inclusive. Back in 2015, of course, it became a movement with the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite, and a lot of African-American actors and filmmakers were protesting the fact that year after year, while there were supposedly, worthy movies starring or made by Black filmmakers and starring Black actors, that they were continually overlooked in favor of movies starring and made by white filmmakers. And so there has been a movement over the last 5 years. It doesn't seem to some years it seems to have an impact, some it doesn't, because it's based on what movies are out there. I don't think you can just put a stamp on this. But Oscar has been trying to integrate its voting membership to include more people of color and more women, so that there will be more representation in the nominees, especially the key categories like Best Picture and Best Actor and Best Actress and Supporting and things like that. And so we will see what happens here. They took another step. In fact, last year, or I think it was in 20, I don't know, was it in 2019 or 2020 when they tried to get a most popular film Oscar in, and then that was completely rebuffed? Was that last year?
Oh, yeah. I think that was last year.
I think it was late last year, and there was an idea, because there, people were complaining that, popular films that were making millions and billions at the box office were never represented in the Best Picture category, even though Oscar several years ago expanded the list to 10 in order to do that. It seems like those movies were still not getting in. They they kind of lifted a trial balloon to see if they could add a new category about, you know, popular films based on some criteria. But that was, as I said before, quickly rebuffed. So they tabled that. But now this this new move to be more inclusive is much more serious, and it's in the books, and it will be affecting the Oscars of 2021. And basically, they are talking about to be even considered for, the requirements to be considered for a Best Picture from now on, starting with next year. Every film has to have at least one actor from a minority or underrepresented racial or ethnic group in a significant role. The story must center on women or the LGBTQ plus people, racial, ethnic group, or disabled, and at least 30% of the cast must be actors from at least four underrepresented categories. And there's also some other requirements for the cast, I mean, for the crew, in terms of people behind the scenes, about department heads, and more than six crew members must be from these racial or ethnic groups. And at least 30% of the entire crew must be from these four underrepresented or racial groups. So it's going to be very interesting to see how filmmakers moving forward, do they adhere to these rules in order to be considered, or do they just say, hey, you can't tell me how to make my art, and if it's not nominated for an Oscar, so be it. What's your take on this?
I think it's important that when you say that, you know, diversity is important, I think it's important to put action behind that. So I think this is a good thing. I think that it's really important that film and any art really kind of reflects the world around us. And so we don't live in a world made of, like, you know, made up of only old white men, right? So
hey,
I mean, sorry.
Well, first of all, I like the way you're agreeing to old. Thank you even more. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoy Emily's final appearance.
And that's a wrap on Emily.
This is going to be a very short, you know what? Hell with Drew Barrymore. Emily, it was great to talk to you. I hope you guys stay safe.
I'm going to get canceled faster than Drew Barrymore.
Wow. Well, I don't think that's possible.
No, of course you're not old. Yeah, you don't quite fit that category
yet. Right. Nice save. Old.
Right.
Nice save. Nice try.
But I, and so, but my hope is that, you know, people don't look at this list and say, I just hope that this just starts creating it gets people thinking in a way maybe that they didn't before. And I hope that it just becomes a matter of, this just becomes second nature over time, because of course you should have, again, you should be hiring people both in front of the camera and behind the camera that represent our communities, right? So I hope that people, like, and I would hope that nobody says, like, well, you can't tell me how to make my art, because honestly, like, it takes a whole crew of people to make a film, right? And I think, I would hope that the best directors out there know that. They may be in charge, but at the end of the day, they cannot make a film totally on their own. So, you know, I think this is a good thing, and I hope that it does actually, you know, start to, like, create change for the better in that industry.
Well, I think, first of all, what's unfortunate is, to your point, that these kind of new requirements have to be written down and have to be demanded. Yeah.
Right, because
as you said, you know, in a perfect world, which this is certainly not, and we're learning that more and more each day, you know, this, to your point, you would hire people based on their merit and based, you know, and reflective, and you'd want as many to be as inclusive as possible. And so it's a shame that we have to, you know, put out an edict. So I think that it's unfortunate that we have to do that, but it's clear that in the past, the mere urging of this was not enough. And while there was some temporary adherence to something like this, at the end of the day, people fell right back into their old ways.
Right.
And so clearly urging, strongly urging, was just not enough. That was the way they initially started it, to see how people would, follow. And while it happened in a few occasions, it certainly didn't happen in any kind of regular where that was par for the course. So obviously, the Oscar carries some power and carries some clout. There will be some, but I have to say, I'm sure that you said hopefully some filmmakers won't say to, don't tell me how to make my art. I'm sure that some will, and not that they want to exclude, necessarily, or that they're racist, or that they want to exclude different groups. But at the same time, some people have a crew and a group that they work with, that they collaborate with, that they are comfortable with, and that they feel that when I'm going into war, these are the people I want to go into war with, and that's, they might not be making, outward statements that I'm just going to do what I want to do, but they also might say, look, this is my group, and I've worked with them for 20 years, and I'm certainly open to bringing new people in, but maybe some of these requirements are too much, and so maybe they will just forego having a film be, considered for an Oscar, in order to just make the film that they want to make. That there is a little gray line there,
Well, I mean, that's kind of, I think they can still make the film they want to make, but what you're talking about is more like, some of the directors who have their kind of, their group of people that they've worked with over time, and they bring them back to every, they have the same team essentially that they work with. And so that's right. A little bit different.
Well, but I'm just saying, if that team does not fall now into these new requirements, then they will have to either make adjustments or say, okay, this movie's not going to be Oscar considered. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And there's that. And like I said, it's sad that these have to be, just like put down in writing, because I do think to some extent, you are in a subtle way, you are influencing art and creativity by demanding these, especially if you're talking about plot lines or if you're talking about a lot of it is they say significant actors, which was an interesting thing. It's not necessarily lead actors, right. Because they're still saying, look, they're still trying to be fair that this is show business. And, you can't just say, tomorrow, Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, are no longer going to be in movies.
Right.
Because they're not of color or they're not from another, underrepresented group. I mean, clearly there are some box office stars that the industry relies on. So by saying significant roles or significant actors, they're not saying, they're saying, they just say, you are not going to say that you can't, now that, no white actors can ever star in a movie anymore.
No, see, most movies, there are so few movies that have like a very, I'm thinking of like a lot of times when a play is adapted for film, sometimes in those cases you have a very small cast, right? Like if I think about, I was just reading about this the other day. That movie Proof with Anthony Hopkins and Gwyneth Paltrow and Jake Gyllenhaal, they're like pretty much the only people in that movie. But right. It's based on a play and there were only a few characters.
Right.
But for the most part, most films have fairly big ensemble casts. So, even though you might have like your lead, right? Or you have a couple of lead actors who are kind of the marquee, draws for the film. I mean, still there should be plenty of, ways there are plenty of roles that I think I would imagine would fall under that category of being considered a significant role.
No,
it doesn't just have to be the lead.
No, I think this is a very big deal though, Because, you know, amidst all the talk of change in the last several months, you know, in our overall society, there really hasn't been much. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of protesting and a lot of calls for it, but we haven't really seen any systemic changes put in place. And so this is really, I mean, once again, now this is an award. This is a movie award. This is not, you know, civil rights. This is not government.
Right.
So I'm not saying that the culture or our society is going to change because of this. But I do give at least the Oscar board and the Oscar people credit for stepping up and not waiting, not letting the tide of this fade away. They have, you know, this seems to be more and more since 2015, a more recurring, you know, criticism, especially in a year when, once again, when the nominations come out, they're dominated by white films.
Mm-hmm.
So it will now be very interesting to see moving forward, you know, which, you know, now I think, you know, it's going to be funny when a movie is even produced, at least initially, you're going to see this breakdown probably, like, you know, in the review or somewhere, you know, like, okay, just so you know, this movie doesn't really fit the, you know, will this movie, you know, there may be some debate.
Oh, I'm sure there will be.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see, A, moving forward, since now we're not even making movies for the most part. They tried to film the new Batman movie and Robert Pattinson got COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so even that, you know, while we try to open things up and try to get back to normal, there are just some things that still cannot happen in a COVID world. So it'll be interesting because movies are going to be delayed. Filming is going to be delayed on a lot of things. It will give time for people to and writers to come up with new story ideas right now before they are filmed. And it will be very interesting to see how different studios and how different filmmakers adhere to this. And if they do ultimately make the decision to say, you know what, I'm making this movie the way that I need to make it. And if it doesn't hit those guidelines, it won't be up for an Oscar, and too bad. So I don't know. I'm like you. I'm glad to see this. I think it's a positive move, but I also wonder in the more kind of esoteric world, are we demanding and putting restrictions, or are we putting demands on creativity and art? And that scares me a little, because there, I would think artistic freedom is really freedom is tied to creativity. And so when you start to give either quotas or specific rules on what will go into the art, then you are limiting it. You are limiting it to some extent. So, I don't know.
I mean, but I do think, though, like, the Oscars are supposed to be like the pinnacle of, you know, in for that industry of like kind of what you're trying to achieve. You know, I mean, and so that's kind of the highest honor you can get in that industry. And I think there's something to be said for being able to create a diverse, you know, cast and crew and a diverse group to kind of make, you know, to collaborate. I feel like there's something to be said for being able to do that and sort of needing. What am I trying to say here? I think that if you want to be at the top of your field, you should have to meet certain requirements. And I'm not just speaking of like these specific requirements, but I just think, I think a great director who's putting together a cast and a crew, if they're really at the top of their game and the top of their industry, they should be able to do this.
Yeah, no. I think it's a move that, that needs to be made, because as I said before, the urging of it or the, you know, the espousing of it is not enough. It hasn't been enough. You know, this that the Oscars so white hashtag thing started in 2015, and every year it's either, you know, there's either a lot of diversity or there's none. It's once again, like we always do. We either the needle goes one side or the other, never in the middle.
Right.
And so this is meant to assure that as much as you can, that you know, that there will be a diverse group of films and actors and behind the scenes people and stories to reflect you know, a diverse audience of who we are. And so there may be some stories and movies that may never have gotten a chance to be made that will now be made.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be some films that would one time have been green lighted without even thinking that may not get made anymore because they don't, you know, fit those rules. So it'll be interesting. The next couple of years will be interesting to see now how Hollywood, how the creative community responds and adheres to these. I think we'll have to just wait and see. But as I said before, I think it's a positive step. Now we'll just have to see what happens. Is, you know, so often, as I've said many times, things look good on the whiteboard, and then maybe we'll have to change the color of the board. but then when people get involved, a lot of times it crashes and burns. So we'll have to see.
And also we also need COVID to go away before people can actually get back to
exactly.
making movies again. So
exactly.
But,
so we'll see about that. Issue two, in the words of John McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Group. Issue two. Emmy. So this is good. So the Emmy Awards were given out yesterday. On September 20th, we are recording this before then, so we're going to talk a little in advance. And as I said earlier in the podcast, you'll be able to know right away how wrong or right we were. But a very interesting Emmy broadcast, first of all, because it's gonna be very strange because I can't see it being anything more than a 3-hour Zoom chat.
Yeah, I did not watch what was on recently. Was it like the some music awards?
I haven't watched anything.
What did Lady Gaga host? Was that?
Oh yeah, that was the MTV Awards. Yeah.
Okay, I didn't watch that, so I don't actually know how these things are going to go. But I think that it is going to be kind of awkward. I would think.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, from what I understand, they are going ahead now from the pure award standpoint. The good thing, like I think we're next year, like this year's Oscars, which will be in April, they pushed it back till April 25th. I don't understand how they're going to do an Oscar ceremony because there's so few films being released.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how you can have a legitimate Oscar for the films of 2020 because they're just not there. Movie theaters have not been open. They've released a few. They've released a few on demand, but the numbers are very small. The viewership is small. The movie Tenet, which was a very it's like a $200 million film by Christopher Nolan, which was supposed to be one of the big hits of the summer. It made $20 million,
mm-hmm.
In limited release. I just don't see how that's going to happen. Now, the good thing for the Emmy Awards is that when COVID hit, for the most part, most of the shows that were going to be nominated had begun. And
right.
the nominating time, at least for the shows of which are qualified, were already being shown. A few were delayed that were supposed to come on before the deadline of the voting, and those were pushed back. But for the majority, the season that started in October and went through April or May, those shows, for the most part, did get on. So this is a legitimate Emmy Awards in terms of the shows that were on during the qualifying season. So that's good. Now, the other side is the ceremony is going to be completely truncated. It's going to be completely, socially distanced. They're filming. They're actually, Jimmy Kimmel and the crew are going to be in the Staples Center.
Oh, really?
Which is an arena that holds like 20,000. That's where the Lakers play. That's where concerts are, because they felt that to be socially distanced for the crew, they would need that big of a space.
Right. But see now,
but everyone else is going to be in their homes, on Zoom. There's going to have over 200 video connections going on during this telecast. So the chances for it to go wrong are there. The chances for it to feel sterile are there. So I don't know, as a viewing experience, how great the Emmy Award broadcast is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I think you and I don't agree necessarily on Kimmel. I like Kimmel. I think he's funny. I think he does well. Look, he handled the whole, like, oops, we announced the wrong best picture at the Oscars pretty well. So I think he's good with improv, right? And also, he's used to having, I mean, he's continued to do his show.
It's been on for almost 20 years
throughout most
now.
Of this. Yeah, and so, but I mean, even during like COVID, you know, he's been doing it from his kitchen.
Right,
like,
right.
So I think that part of getting over how awkward it will be, I think will at least be a little smoother because Kimmel should be able to handle it.
Yeah, but still,
this.
There's not going to be anyone give, you know, there's not going to be no audience.
No,
there's not going to be a red carpet. There's not going to be an audience. It's going to look like a Zoom chat.
Right. Well, which makes me think, why did they even bother having Kimmel at the Staples Center? Why not just have him do it from his kitchen? Too?
I
mean, what's difference, right?
But,
when you have everybody else on Zoom. But
yeah, I mean, right now, as I said, we're talking about this in the future tense, even though by the time this podcast is posted, people will have already seen it. But
okay, and here's my other concern, which I know you probably won't care about as much, but I mean, this is important to me. Will there be gowns? Like,
that's a great point.
Is Jennifer Aniston going to get all glam to, like, you know, to like appear on a Zoom call? You know, I don't even know if that's even appropriate.
So are they going to get glammed up? B,
yeah.
Are they going to stand? I mean, you know, to your point, what good is it wearing a gown if all I see is your head?
Right.
So then, like, do they walk into the room?
Yeah. How is this going to work?
I don't know.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they try to make this as entertaining and interesting as possible, as I said, as opposed to just a 3-hour elongated Zoom chat. It's going to look like that to some extent. Now, what they do content wise, I don't know. That's up. We'll see how creative they can be. As I said, with all the technical aspects of this, it sounds like you're launching a space shuttle. There's a lot of room for error here. I don't think there's any O-rings involved, but the chances for frozen screens, for broken audio, for video that disappears, for a complete blackout of the entire broadcast, to me, that's going to be the most fun part to watch for.
Yeah.
Is to see.
Or, you know, the flip side is maybe people will actually be given a chance to give their speeches instead of having 3 hours of mostly fluff and filler and then playing people off when they're just trying to accept.
Yeah. So it will be very, very different. But I thought it would, at the very least, we could test our television viewing acumen by giving this is maybe something new in the history of predictions. We are predicting our choices when you already know who won.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever been done before. We are predicting and you already know who won. So I thought we could just do a quick little run through on these. So the Emmys are broken up into some of the same categories. They do, I think, go into comedy and drama, unlike the Oscars, which just kind of lumped them all into one thing. So for the best comedy, I have to think that over the last year and a half since it debuted on Netflix and became much more known to the mass audience, the whole, at least with the hipster crowd, Schitt's Creek has been the show to watch.
Yeah.
And so I really think that even though there's a lot of comedies out there, there's a lot of talk for The Good Life, which, had its final season.
The Good Place.
I'm sorry, The Good Place, which had its final season with Ted Danson.
That was a great show, by the way. I loved
it. I liked it at the beginning.
I was sad when it ended.
I liked it at the beginning. I thought it got a little goofy, and then I wasn't there when they had the big reveal where they were really in hell. I didn't stick around long enough for that.
Oh, spoiler alert, Jim.
Well, okay. Sorry. I'm sorry. You know, for the last 5 months, if you haven't had time to, you can't say I'm busy. Okay.
Yeah. No, that's true. Nobody is busy.
Yeah. So nobody's busy. If there's any shows that you have, you know, and I'm, you're still watching shows from 5 years ago. So, I mean, I'm sure you haven't, but I'm the normal people. You have no excuse. So sorry. If you didn't know the ending, I just ruined it for you. But there's a lot of talk for that. But I just think that that Schitt's Creek has been such a cult favorite, and that it just took the world by storm. Now, I watched Schitt's Creek when it first started on the Pop channel, Pop TV, which nobody saw, which is why no one saw the show.
Right.
The first couple, three seasons. And then when it went on Netflix, just goes to show you the power of Netflix. Once it got on Netflix, everybody discovered it. Ironically, by the time it went on Netflix, I dropped watching it because I felt like it was just getting redundant. So meanwhile, the whole world was gushing over it. I got tired of it. And so while I was on board at the beginning, I wasn't on board when the rest of the world was clamoring for it.
Yeah, well, I'm with you. I think this has a really good shot. I'm predicting Schitt's Creek wins it because also like The Good Place, I believe this was their final season.
Yes,
it
was. Yeah.
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 So I think there's also that sometimes that gives shows a little bit of an edge, right? They kind of like to reward them before, you know, when they still have the chance. I've seen Schitt's Creek. I think it's a good show. I haven't watched it religiously, but every once in a while,
it was an interesting concept. You know, it was the fish out of water. It was a rich family that loses its fortune and has to go to some small rural town and start over. And you know, they were very prominent family, so there's all that. Everybody knows them. And so it's like Paris Hilton in The Simple Life. You know,
it's a little bit like Arrested Development.
Yeah, it's very similar. Yeah, it's very similar. But you know, Eugene Levy and his son created it. Dan Levy. They did bring in toward the end a lot of homosexual kind of liberation, and one of the characters who started out seemingly heterosexual, and then he winds up getting married.
Is that Eugene Levy's son?
So I mean, at the very least he was bisexual, but so the show is also heralded for that. Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara from SCTV stars
they are so good.
Yeah, and they're good together. They always were.
Yeah.
And so and Chris Elliott also was on there, and he was funny as one of the townspeople. So I just felt like I really liked it at the beginning, but I just felt like the show was getting a little redundant for me in terms of plot lines. But as I said, people started binge watching it. It became this huge hit, and it became this important kind of society show of promoting different lifestyles, and so it took on a whole new life there. So that's why I think Schitt's Creek is going to win that. And to go to the other categories in the comedy series, I think that Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are both going to win in those categories.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although the lead actress in a comedy series is such a strong category because it's like Christina Applegate. I really liked that show, Dead to Me. It's that they just finished, like, I think they're second season so hopefully, and I think that's going to continue. Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Miss Maisel, I mean, that is like the show that, you know, I feel like they've really kind of swept the last few years.
That's just been an Emmy favorite.
So that's, she's obviously a strong contender. Linda Cardellini, who is also in Dead to Me, so she and Christina Applegate are up against each other here in this category, but they are both like co-leads of that series, and she is fantastic on it, like really, truly good. So I think she's a strong contender. And then, of course, Catherine O'Hara, you know, we already talked about, and Issa Rae and Tracee Ellis Ross are also, you know, both very strong contenders. So this is a really tough one, I think. And it could be that Catherine O'Hara gets that slight edge again, because this is the, we know that that's the final season of Schitt's Creek and there won't be any more. So.
And I think both Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara are kind of sentimental favorites. They've been around. Yeah. I mean, from the SCTV days, that literally goes back 40 years now, from the late 70s and early 80s, where they've been around, and then they've been great in so many of the Christopher Guest films, like Best in Show and The Mighty Wind and For Your Consideration. So, you know, I think that this they are deserving for what they did do on this show, but I think they also get, given their pedigree and their just their time in the business and for doing good work over a, you know, a 40-year span, I think they're really going to I think that Schitt's Creek is going to be the clear winner. And like you said, there's a lot of good shows. Once again, per usual, the network television offerings are scant in terms of Emmy nominees. And so that, to some extent, makes the Emmys kind of difficult for people, some people, to get into. Because if you don't have your pulse on all these streaming services and these millions of shows, then some of these shows fall through the cracks and you don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people feel a little disengaged from the Emmys, especially in the last several years, because, you know, how many shows can I watch? I can't keep up with all these shows and all these streaming services, you know? But so I think that's where we're at on that. So in the drama category, what are your thoughts?
Okay, in the drama category, I am predicting that there will be a Succession sweep. I'm hoping. I love that show.
So now how funny would that be? So right now, because I agree with you, and we didn't talk about this, so how funny is that, in that the way we're talking, two shows might sweep all the major awards.
I hope. I mean, for Succession, I hope so, because I think that's a really good show that really hasn't gotten enough recognition in the last couple of years. And I think now it's kind of finally starting to. So, I mean, I'm hoping it wins best drama.
Well, you know how Succession is beginning to gain steam. It's an HBO show. It's a great drama about a media family, kind of based on, you know, Rupert Murdoch, with the head of a major media conglomerate, a right wing, and with a bunch of kids who are all looking to succeed him as he gets older. It's kind of like a King Lear ish kind of story. Great acting, interesting stories, but really amazing acting by almost everybody. But you know that the show is gaining traction, being on the hip meter and getting very cool, when the star of it, Brian Cox, who has been around forever, one of the great actors, British actor, and you've seen him in a million things. In fact, if you watch Frasier, he was Daphne's father. He played Daphne's father on Frasier. But he's been on a ton of things. But you know how popular the show may be getting. If you've watched any commercials of late, and if you've seen the McDonald's commercials, that's Brian Cox's voice when he goes, bup, 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 bup.
Really?
That's Brian Cox when he goes.
I haven't seen a commercial in some time because, you know, I'd never watch anything.
Well, if you watch network television, McDonald's is doing these new commercials for the last 4 or 5 months, and they don't show him. It's just a voiceover, but they show the food. And for instance, he says, if you're going to, or, you know, make sure to bring a lot of, you know, napkins if you're going to order one of those juicy quarter pounders with cheese. And he goes, but up, 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 up. you know, because that's the McDonald's song.
Yes, actually, okay, there's a version of that commercial that I do know
with the French fries.
Loves it with the French fries. Make sure you order some,
right?
For
because
your
they're gonna because they're gonna
your
wind
fries
up
will be your French and fries.
Bop,
yes.
Bop, bop, bop. That's Brian Cox.
You know, and the irony of that is he probably got paid, you know, like ridiculous sums for doing that little voiceover than he maybe has for, you know.
Oh, exactly. Yeah,
three seasons of Succession.
Oh, but. Yeah, or just an amazing career. But yeah, when. Yeah. When you start to see, when I heard his voice, when I'm like, boy, they chose Brian Cox for that. Okay, Succession is certainly in the zeitgeist now. But I agree with you. If you haven't seen Succession, you should definitely binge it if you can on HBO. It really is a great show.
Can I also put one more thing out there?
Yeah.
I want Succession to win in every category it's nominated for. But if I could only choose one, I really, really, really hope Kieran Culkin.
I was just going to say that's and that's
the son, Roman
and Macaulay Culkin's brother.
If they only get one award, I hope it's him. He is so brilliant on this show. And
well,
his character, it's a great character, you know, but
well, yeah, no. So he played, you know, like I said, they have, you know, this father who's the kingpin has been for years, powerful, well-known, media, you know, mogul. And he's got three kids, and they're all kind of vying. That's where the word succession comes in, vying to take his place. As he is he's had a stroke, so his health is at is certainly a question. He's got three very different kids. The character Roman that Emily just talked about is a kind of you know, flippant kind of you know, total millennial, you know, druggy. You know, just
but he's also grown up in this world.
He's a spoiled rich kid who
he's
isn't
used to getting everything.
Yeah,
he wants.
He's gotten everything he wants. He doesn't deserve any positions that he's had. But
he doesn't take anything seriously.
Yeah, he's a screwball in every sense of the word. But he's an endearing character, and the way he plays off his two other siblings is really good. He is excellent in that role. But I have to say that Jeremy Strong, that's his name.
Yes,
right?
Who plays the older brother.
He plays the older brother. He's just, you know, he feels like, you know, he's the kid who can never live up to his dad's expectations. He too is a drug addict. He always wants to be his dad. His dad has always been giving him tough love. And there's a very interesting dynamic there, and he really plays that role well. And
he does, but unfortunately for him, he's nominated in the lead category alongside Brian Cox. And
right,
so
yeah.
If I were his people, I might have submitted him for.
I don't see how Brian Cox.
Supporting,
yeah, I don't see how Brian Cox loses just because he really is the foundation of that show, and I. Well, like I said, there are great performances by everybody. All the kids, their siblings, their girlfriends, everybody surrounded. It's just well cast and well acted. There's no question about it. But Brian Cox, I can't. Every time he's not in a scene, I want him to come into a scene.
Yeah.
In that show, it really is. There's some great drama. As I said, it's very Shakespearean. I'm not saying that nobody's wearing, you know, they're not wearing, you know, Shakespearean outfits. I'm just saying in the tone of it, there's a lot of Shakespearean tragedy, you know, kind of colors and in hues here. But if you haven't seen Succession, what hurts me to say this in this Succession sweep, because I agree with you, I really thought that this season of Better Call Saul was excellent in that Bob Odenkirk.
Don't tell me what happened.
No, I'm just going to say Bob Odenkirk was given so much to work with, and he really, I mean, that I think he's done a great job since day one in that show.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I've loved him in Breaking Bad. But what was so great about this season was that you really started, this season was when, you know, Saul that we knew from Breaking Bad began to not only emerge but take hold.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was fun after several years of buildup to see where he came from, and we knew where he was going to end up, and we wanted to see how he got there. And they really did an excellent job of bringing that character from one point to another, and he seemed very different when he started, and yet the transformation seemed very effortless and very smooth and very seamless. And there were some amazing episodes throughout. The whole season was great, and he was great. So if I had a sentimental favorite, I would love to see either Bob Odenkirk or, better call, Saul Wynn in one of the categories. But I'll tell you, Succession, I just think, has gotten a buzz. Mm-hmm. And I think the COVID world has helped it. I think a lot of people have discovered it and have been binging on it. And as I said, as silly as that sounds, if Brian Cox gets cast for a mass market McDonald's commercial, that says something.
Yeah.
So I think we're both on the same page on that. So you'll see how we did. We basically, without even matching notes here, which I think is very interesting, because you and I have many times disagree on a lot of things. Yeah. But we are certainly lockstep right here. So we are predicting. Basically, you could, no need to watch it for 3 hours if you did.
Yeah.
Because two shows are going to dominate: Schitt's Creek and Succession. So we may have been very right or very wrong.
Yeah.
But you already know. We don't know yet, but you know. So, wow, I feel like I'm in a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, issue three.
Oh, okay.
Drew. All I could say is, ah! Okay. Drew Barrymore, in the midst of a COVID world, decided to premiere a talk show. I'm not surprised. She's got a big cachet with the Gen X crowd. She has had a career that spanned from when she was a baby, practically, and certainly went to fame in E.T. and later on, in The Wedding Singer and, what is it, 50 Dates? Is that the...
Yeah, 50 First Dates.
50 First Dates.
She produced the Charlie's Angels.
Angels.
Was a huge hit.
The Santa Clara, what was it, the Santa Clara?
Santa Clarita Diet.
Which
I really like that show.
So, I mean, there's no question that Drew, and she, she famously, flashed David Letterman on his talk show. She's gone through crazy marriages. She's gone through crazy boyfriends. She was an alcoholic at age 14. She emancipated herself.
Now I think she might even have her own wine label. So I never quite understand how that all.
Yeah, plays, it's all over the place.
But it's important to say she's also been a trailblazer, because she was really one of the first women in Hollywood to create her own production company.
Oh yeah, when she was 20 years old.
When she was very young.
Yeah. She was 20 years old. Like I said, sadly, she had a very screwed up, family and personal life. She comes from the famous and infamous Barrymore acting family of Lionel Barrymore, of course. If you ever watched It's a Wonderful Life, he played Mr. Potter. Hello, George. That's her, I think, her uncle.
Yeah,
and John Barrymore, the great actor, and Ethel Barrymore were her grandparents. So I mean, mm-hmm. she comes from an amazing acting family. She, established herself as I said, Gertie from E.T. She almost stole the movie from E.T.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been definitely we've grown. She's grown up in the public eye. She's been an alcoholic, as I said, at 14. She's gone through drugs and alcohol, crazy life personally, successful life professionally. And so, of course, like everybody like that, she ends up with her own talk show. So it just premiered. Emily has gone on record as saying that she is a huge Drew Barrymore fan, admirer. And so I have to say, what do you think of the Drew Barrymore show?
Okay. Well, so this is the first week. So this just premiered this week. So there have been three episodes. But okay, I love Drew Barrymore. I really do. and I
hope there's a butt coming up.
Okay, listen, she is very lovable. She is very watchable. And I think people also really, there's something that I feel that the public feels slightly protective over her, because she had such a tough childhood. It doesn't sound like either of her parents were really there for her. And yet she she was successful despite all that. And so, and she's also in her, I guess her post-teen years, she kind of emerged as this like super positive, bubbly adult, you know,
which is really aggravating. Which is really aggravating.
No, but I love her for that. But listen, here's what I'm going to say. I really want more for my A-listers, and I really want more for Drew Barrymore. I feel like it's like the same way that I feel like I prefer like a 1994 Gwyneth Paltrow, who would literally rather stick needles into her eyes than like talk about her personal life.
Right.
You know, and like now we can't get her to shut up about herself.
Exactly.
I feel sort of the same way about Drew. It's like, this just feels very pedestrian.
Well, it's her, well, first of all, the show, she's trying to, the show is so busy.
There is a
thousand things going.
It's manic.
Yeah, it's manic is the perfect word. It doesn't know what it wants to be. It wants to be everything. They're doing trading places. They're redesigning people's homes. They're doing cooking segments. They're giving big oversized checks to people. Like Publishers Clearing House. They're bringing guests on and they're crying. It's Oprah. Okay. It's the talk.
It's like,
it's every show.
Ellen. Yeah.
It's every show. There's dancing.
And I think like one of the things that is also one of the things that was a big miss already, I think, just in the first few episodes. So like, I guess one of the reasons why someone like Drew Barrymore would be put in a role like this is that they say, oh, and she has, you know, celebrity friends, all like A-list celebrity friends all over the place. So we can get these people to come on the show and to do interviews with her, and she will be able to. So part of what should be the benefit of that is that maybe Drew would be able to get something out of her celebrity guests that other people can't get, right? Because they're really close friends of hers. Example, Cameron Diaz. Cameron Diaz has not been in public anywhere for years. She hasn't made a movie in 5 years. She's kept a really low profile. She got married. She had a baby. She's been super private about all of that. But she comes on Drew Barrymore's show, and I'm like expecting, oh, wow, that's huge to get Cameron Diaz on. But they are very close friends, and they have been since they made Charlie's Angels 20 years ago. And I felt like that interview, so it was with Lucy Liu and Cameron Diaz, was really just all of them telling each other why they're so great. You know, it was like them fawning over Drew and Drew fawning over them and talking about like how long they've been friends and how important their friendship is. Yeah. But like, we really got nothing.
She's not an interviewer. You know, right. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
this is what I'm saying. Like, one of the biggest benefits of putting Drew Barrymore in this type of project
is
would
get,
be that
yeah.
you can get that. You can yeah. get the stuff other people can't get.
Well, see, but here's the thing, you know, because she thinks that, don't forget, she's a celebrity too. And she thinks that people are just excited to see her and her friends talking about anything. And that's not what you want to see, like you said. And she doesn't know how to interview. And I'm not trying to be mean, but she's out of her element here. And first of all, I didn't know. Yeah. Is that Gertie scream that she did in E.T. when she first sees E.T.? Is that like her calling card? Because she does that when she comes, when the doors open, she goes, ah!
Yeah.
Is that her calling card?
It's a manic energy all around. Oh. You know, I think she's also seems very nervous, which I mean, look, I mean, that would be hard to get up and do that every day. But like, she's been in front of cameras since she was baby, essentially.
It's a train wreck. It's a train wreck. And now,
I mean, I really hate to say it, but
well, I'm so proud. I am so proud of you. I am so proud that you could take away whatever personal admiration or fandom that you have for her and look at this in an objective way and say this and actually criticize her. So I give you a lot of props, because if you did like this show, I could never talk to you again.
Do you know what? I was watching the very first like day I was watching, and I was thinking about you watching it, and I was like cringing internally.
You should have saw what I was doing.
Oh my gosh, like 5 minutes into it.
Oh.
But I mean, I know it's a shame. I really just, I feel like this is a little bit like, I hope this isn't Drew's career jumping the shark, but I think she can always get back.
Oh yeah, she will. No, this will. I mean, and interestingly enough, to your point, despite all the A-list celebrities and all the hype that this show has gotten, because it really is the only new TV talk show to premiere, you know, at this time because of COVID, the ratings were not that good, which surprised me. I thought, you know, at very least the first day, a lot of people would check it out. And they were okay. Yeah. They weren't crazy, you know.
Well, so, I also, though, I do think it's hard to even try to do what she's doing in this environment, because, like, she's in a studio that's pretty much empty. It's just crew members. And I just think, like, I'm not even sure that this could be any better with a studio audience. But
no. Oh, it'd be worse.
I think
oh, my God, it'll be worse with a studio audience.
I think it's hard. I think what also makes it hard to watch is she is kind of this manic energy, but then there's, like, all of this just, like, crickets. I don't know.
But like, it would be so worse with an audience, because then they would be, you know, the crew would be telling them to constantly, you're hearing clapping every 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So nothing would be said or heard, and it would just be this one big love fest. Well, I don't even, you know what? No, it's like I said, it's not even the Titanic. I don't even know what this is.
How much longer do you give it?
Well, the only thing I could think of is that it depends on how much they're spending on it. They may give it a shot just because, you know, to pull it off in 3 weeks would be, to your point, it would really be a huge blow to her.
Yes. And it seems like she may have relocated. I mean, I'm sure she has always had a place in New York and LA, but it seems like she is living in New York right now.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they've got this huge
commitment too.
They've got this. They built. This is my point. They built a huge set for her, like three different. I mean, it's huge. There's a dining room, and there's a kitchen, and there's a, and then they're doing all this, this technology with where because don't forget her A-list guests are not even there.
Yeah,
and yet they're superimposing them in chairs like she's out there, like they're right on the set with her.
Okay, yeah. So, but here's the weird thing. So some of them are doing that and some of them are doing Zoom. I'm guessing it's because the people who are appearing like via this technology, and so they really do look like they're sitting across.
Oh, yeah.
They must be going into a studio, and maybe the people who are Zooming just don't want to go into a studio right now. But that was the one bright spot in the whole thing, was that when I realized that Cameron Diaz wasn't actually sitting across from her, but was in fact in LA, but she really truly looked like they were in the same room.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, well, if they can make Cameron Diaz, right. If they can beam Cameron Diaz onto this set and make her look like she's there, then I hope that they can make, like, you know, that they can actually make the next American Horror Story in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, because why not?
You know, if that technology exists, like, come on, let's get into production with all these shows, you know. But that was pretty much the only bright spot for me.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, poor Drew. Like I said, she craves attention. She's way too bubbly. She's way too positive. She's way too L.A. She's way too Hollywood. At least for my liking, and so we'll see. I don't know if in the show it's just a creative mishmash. It's everything, and yet it's nothing.
Yeah,
and that's the sad part of it.
I agree. Yeah, that's the other. So to your point, it's everything, and yet it's nothing. Like, I also thought it was odd. So there was a very brief cooking segment, but it wasn't even an actual cooking segment. It was like a 30-second clip.
Yeah.
Of.
That's what I'm saying. They're just
doing a cooking demonstration, and then they pointed people to their website. And I'm like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just have the cooking?
Well, like I said, they're trying to just, they've looked at every show and they've taken a piece of every popular show and put it into one. And there's not enough time to do that in an hour. And so there's no one segment, establishes itself, because it's just there. And it's thrown up on the wall, and then it's gone in 10 seconds. It has no chance to breathe and to develop and to engage you. It's just you hit it on the head. It is the most manic thing I've ever seen on television. it really is. And I mean, more than even Monty Python. I mean, it's just crazy. So I, as we finish this podcast, I have to say I'm shocked at how for the most part, we have agreed on everything today.
It's amazing. I know. Well,
we really did. We had three. You know, potentially volatile topics where we could have disagreed, and yet I'm all I could say is I'm glad you're finally learning.
Yes.
It's taken me. I've known you for almost 20 years now, than 20.
It's taken. Yeah, it's taken.
And it's taken a while, but I've finally. I mean, I feel as if you are my Luke Skywalker and I am your Yoda, and you have finally lifted the ship out of the swamp.
Yes.
Taught you, I have.
Oh, jeez.
Taught you, I have.
I didn't know that you did a Yoda.
Young Emily. Taught you, I have, young Emily. The force is deep in you, Emily. Well, thank you so much. We will see what happens to Oscar. We will see what happened on the Emmys. And we will certainly see what happens to Drew Barrymore with her train wreck of a show. But thank you so much. Stay safe. Mask up over there in Texas.
Yes.
And we will talk soon.
Yes, thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure. And yes, masks always.
And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Don't forget, a new episode is posted every Monday at WGNRadio.com or wherever you find and download your favorite podcast. We are there. So don't forget to rate and to subscribe to that platform. But most importantly, send a message, send a link. Send the word out to your friends that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 226. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.
Listen, you must.